everyone. Because this podcast is being released free of charge, I'm asking each guest to choose an organization or fund they feel passionate about and encourage anyone who is able to donate. Today's guest chose the Color Factor. Based in Mokinstis, or Calgary, Alberta, Treaty 7 territory, the Color Factor is a nonprofit mental health organization for Black, Indigenous, and people of color, or BIPOC, that reclaims wellness through traditional healing practices and helps bridge the gap in the mental health care system. You can donate and read more about them at thecolorfactor.com, color spelled with a U, or click on the link in the episode description. Hello, everybody. I'm Chloe Huberto, and this is Enthusiastic, a podcast where I invite a guest on for an informal conversation about something they feel passionate about and are eager to discuss. I met today's guest first in 2018 when we were paired for the interdisciplinary series of Sage Theatre's Ignite Festival for Emerging Artists. Together, we created a 15-minute spoken word / theatre piece called Tapestry, in which we explored themes of identity, intergenerational trauma, and family legacy. It was a super vital and valuable experience for me, and I'm super excited to have this guest on. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Oki Natanaku Melvi X Genuchlutu Moginstis, in the language of the people of the Blackfoot Confederacy, or the Nitsitapi, the real people as opposed to spirit beings, I said, hello, my name is Melvi X, and I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and that's where, you know, I'm being recorded from today. My pronouns are she, her, they, them. I'm a spoken word artist, a burlesque performer, and a photographer, in addition to whatever other endeavors I feel I need or want to be involved with at the time. I've been a professional artist for the past 5 going on 6 years, and I'm happy to be on this podcast today. I have a podcast as well. I'm looking forward to sharing about something I'm enthusiastic about. So,
and what is that?
Well, I had to narrow it down, so I decided, and it's timely because I just launched this resource. I'm passionate about the mental health of Black, Indigenous, and POC, or people of color, and I specifically identify racialized folks because our experiences of mental health directly involve or are impacted by our race and our experiences with racism. And I knew that I needed to create some kind of directory to help other folks navigate a very complex and often hostile mental health resources and information networks. So I created a resource list about a year ago. So this was available, well, still is available as a Google Doc, but I'm redirecting people to the website now, which is BIPOCmentalhealthyyc.wordpress.com. And that is, so the curated resource list, that Google Doc, is now a living and fully operational website.
That's really awesome. And I feel like it being a website as opposed to a Google Doc maybe makes it more accessible instead of just having to like comb through the document. There's like I took a look earlier. There's like a little menu. There's like very clear categories.
100%. And, you know, it started to become a logistical issue trying to share this Google Doc link, and then if people don't have, Gmail, I mean, currently the settings on the doc itself are set so that anybody can access that link, but it's simply not scalable to have the resources available as a document. And so it was literally last night that I started the WordPress, and I initially was just going to have like one web page that was basically a copy and paste from the doc. And I realized very quickly that as a user, it was going to be difficult and just irritating to scroll through this massive list of resources. So I thought, okay, there's already great organization to the document in that the links are separated out by category. And so those categories are the menu categories that you'll see on the website's navigation. And the resources are by title. It's not alphabetical. It's the order that I curated them in the Google Doc, and now they are on the website according to category. I checked all the links to make sure that they are all functional, and they are. The only page that is missing right now is the relevant articles, because the relevant articles, I have like 20 of them, and that's going to take a little bit of time to comb through and see if they're all still working links. So that will happen, but the most important links are on there. It looks good, and I am so thrilled to have this resource available for people. And I really want listeners to understand that I don't profit from this. I'm not getting paid by anybody to do this. I'm not affiliated with an organization. I simply wanted to give back to the community and empower others with the tools that I know they'll need to navigate the mental health resources that exist. I mean, we're, I guess, to some extent fortunate in Calgary that there are many mental health resources, but the problem is what resources are people getting directed to? And that's a gap that BIPOC Mental Health YYC addresses, is specifically the gap in resources that are specific to or center Black, Indigenous, and POC communities.
Yeah, I think it's like really so important and helpful to have something like that, because like what you're saying, there's such a wide swath of places to look up and like go through, and it's probably super overwhelming, especially as a non-white person, to be going through all of these organizations and also maybe be wondering like, will they even react positively if like race is brought up as like
Nope. I can verify that I have yet to have a positive experience with a white mental health professional where I brought up race, and that was what made it click into my mind that I was not safe with white mental health professionals. And so one experience I had with Alberta Health Services was a therapist and registered nurse who was assigned to my case when I was in the hospital, and I worked up the courage and felt enough trust to talk about race or to bring it up with this nurse, and I truly wish I hadn't. But it was also eye-opening for myself. And her response to me bringing up race and how this had, how racism has so negatively impacted my mental health, her response was that she treats all of her patients the same, regardless of their color. And if I didn't mind, could I please share examples with her of racism that I experienced in my life? And I knew at that moment that our therapeutic relationship had ended in terms of its effectiveness for my mental health. And thankfully, this was at the end of the program that I was in anyways. Thank friggin' God. And I was like, okay, this therapeutic relationship has run its course. And in that program, we had these community, like these group meetings, and I shared in the meeting two very problematic dynamics that I had noticed in this program. For one, we were expected or encouraged to participate in this drumming. And the drumming was specifically plucked from Indigenous and African healing and cultural practices, but without any acknowledgement of that fact. And the drumming sessions in this particular hospital were led by a white man. And I directly called attention to how this is problematic. Part of the reason that, you know, I had this mental health breakdown was related to the racism I was experiencing in every single area of my life. And now to be in a position where I'm at my most vulnerable, and even here I'm being forced to think about and I'm being impacted by racism, that was something I knew I had to call out publicly. And even as I was talking about this drumming example, a white man in the group piped in right away and started talking about how the Irish have drumming. And I stopped him and I said, "You do not get to interrupt my time to speak. That is harmful, and I will not allow you to do that." And I'll add the caveat that, of course, you know, European societies and cultures also have drumming practices, but those were not the drums and drumming practices that we were using in the hospital. We were specifically using Indigenous and African drumming, not even techniques. There was literally no technique being used or taught. But the drum styles were Indigenous and African. We had Indigenous hand drums, and there was African djembes and other drums. And so would I have said anything if we were using, you know, Irish drums or European drums? No, I wouldn't have. However, I think it is so important to note that I assume the reason we don't use Irish drumming, I'll use that example because he brought it up, in the program is because I assume that it's considered too difficult for people to just kind of pick up at the drop of a hat. And therein lies the racism underneath that assumption, right? That you can just pick up an Indigenous hand drum or an African djembe and just start banging around on it, and that's okay. It's actually not, because these drums, they come from a place and they come from a cultural tradition, and they do take skill to play, right? And so that they were being peddled off as, oh, you just bang on this to feel good about yourself, to me that was unacceptable and needed to be called out publicly. And I was also you know, empowered by the presence of, there was there was a Black girl who had, I can't say another Black girl because I'm not a girl, I'm friggin' 31 years old. So there's a Black girl in the program, and I told her about this, and she was like, "Oh, hell no. Like, that is not acceptable." She's like, my people, we drum for these particular reasons and in these contexts, and there are certain people who have permission to drum and people who are not permitted to drum. And I knew once I had spoken to her that I was on the right track in calling this out publicly. And there was also the very liberal use of the word slave in throughout some of the documents that they had given us. And I was like, yeah, no, my ancestors were enslaved. You don't get to use that word just all about the place, because enslavement is a very particular human rights violation abuse. And simply because somebody feels that they don't have agency in a situation does not make that true. And so those two things I called out, and I actually had, there was two staff members who it turns out are Indigenous, but they're what we would call white passing here in Canada. So they didn't look Indigenous, but they both spoke to me after and said, "Thank you so much for sharing, because as staff, we have talked about issues of racism and we have been ignored and silenced by our colleagues. And I was like, God damn it. Even them, like, they're professionals and they are having to fight with their colleagues, clearly to not a lot of success in terms of addressing racism and how it impacts mental health. So that was like my own personal graduation from that program. I was like, actually the most beneficial part of that program was me speaking out and me seeing firsthand what the actual dynamic was when I brought up race to a mental health practitioner. And that was the first time I'd ever done that in my life. And I'm glad I did it because I got to see the reaction and it confirmed to me that I would not be willingly in a position again where I would be speaking about my mental health to a white mental health professional.
Yeah, that's so unfortunate because I feel like, if I can ask, was this like pretty recent?
You know, it's funny you ask. No, it depends on your definition of recent. So you mentioned, Chloe, at the start that we met in 2018. So this was at the end of 2018, which feels like forever ago for me in a lot of ways, but also is actually not that long ago. It'll be 3 years soon, right? In terms of year wise. So I wouldn't say that that's particularly recent, but it was a turning point for me in terms of navigating mental health systems.
Yeah, because to me, within the parameters of recent, I was thinking about, it absolutely is 2018. Like sometimes it feels like certain spaces I'm in, like there's at least like a baseline understanding. So it's just, yeah, it's like, you know, people should know at this point. The drumming thing in particular is something that I will admit I haven't really been in a situation where people were like, let's have a drum circle in a long time. But it's something as a white person, even like, who was like aware of many, many issues with racism, had not really thought about. And I think it's like, it's one of those examples of things of something that is like a cultural source of healing or like a connection with community that white people take and use as a mental health resource. Like there's so much of that. Yeah, like meditation and all of these things that are just sort of the things that are like seen to be therapeutic are just sort of plucked out. And any thought of like understanding the cultural weight and significance and like respect for that thing is just, it's just forgotten.
Absolutely. And, you know, And essentially, that is the definition of cultural appropriation, is plucking, you know, the parts of another's culture that you want and not having to carry the burden of any of the discrimination or social stigma attached to that culture or those cultural practices. And I will say this, you know, drumming is healing and people of any race can obviously benefit from that. But to me, the way that that can be done in a way that is respectful is to have an Indigenous or an African person lead the drumming sessions. It's really not hard, right? And any drumming session I've gone to that has been led by an Indigenous person or an African person has been for everybody, right? And they, you know, are able to express the cultural context, to give that meaning. And so it's really not hard to do. I'm not saying that this program shouldn't have the drumming component, because drumming is healing. It should be taught by people of that cultural background, specifically because they were using hand drums and djembes. If they were using Irish drums, whatever Irish person or white person wants to teach that, go for it. But they weren't doing that. And that is where the appropriation comes in.
And also, I can't think of any, like what in schools, it's not like, okay, guys, music class, let's get out all of the Irish drums that the schools have. It's always djembe drums.
Yep. Without any context, without any explanation, you know, from somebody of that cultural background. And so to me, that is exactly the definition of appropriation and where that comes from. And again, this is the value of having someone from that cultural background give that context, right? Because you brought up meditation, yoga, and, you know, it's more and more being seen as kind of a site of contention because of the culturally appropriative elements that too often crop up. And again, these healing practices, you know, some of them are really, you know, they're not restricted in the sense that they are to only be for people of a certain cultural background, but I strongly believe they should be led or contextualized by people of that background. Like, I'm a Zen Buddhist, a Zen practitioner, and obviously that practice is not, you know, a practice that began in North America. And the particular, you know, the Zen practice, Zen Buddhist practice comes from Japan via, you know, China. And, you know, as anybody who's familiar with Buddhism knows, from historical India. And so I, you know, I acknowledge that my spiritual tradition and practice is not, you know, germane to what either my Afro-Caribbean or European heritage is, but I can practice meditation respectfully in a culturally appreciative way by understanding the roots of my spiritual practice, by seeking out practitioners as much as I can who are Japanese or who have you know, connections to Asia. However, you know, here's where these, you know, complexity and nuance come in handy, is that, you know, in Japan, more and more Zen practice is really relegated to kind of funerals and rites of passage, and less so in terms of lay practice. And so really, the founder of my tradition, or the person who brought it to America, let me get it right. Want to make sure I don't mess up the man's name. Shunryo Suzuki. Actually, let me. I got my Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. That was his book. One second here. I hate getting people's names wrong. I think it's like the bare minimum to try to get people's names right. Yes, Shunryo Suzuki. He brought it to America, actually in California. So the Everyday Zen School was founded, that practice. The Everyday Zen School, or the Everyday Zen community, was founded by Norman Fisher, and he was affiliated with Shunryo Suzuki. And one of the things he commented about was how willing Westerners were to adopt lay practice, which is something that is not as important in Japanese lay life. And so, you know, understanding that my meditation practice comes from Japan and comes from Asia, and that in no way, shape, or form am I to teach unless I'm given express permission to do so from teachers and you know, and priests. And, you know, that anything I offer about my practice is as a lay practitioner and not a teacher. And that I would never, you know, claim to be a Japanese person, or that I have some unique, you know, claim to Japanese identity just because I'm a Zen practitioner. I don't. And, you know, as a Westerner practicing Zen, I am to be respectful and acknowledge the roots of my practice. And so you can practice meditation and yoga in a way that is respectful and culturally appreciative and not appropriative.
Just to clarify, lay practice basically means like daily practice, right?
Well, lay as distinct from monastic practice. So monastic being nuns, monks, and priests, and lay practitioners are people who do not live in a monastery.
Okay, got it.
Yep.
I want to ask what was your process for compiling these resources? Like, were you approaching organizations kind of one by one?
No. I have either directly made use of these resources. I know about them. None of the organizations in the resource list were contacted and asked if they wanted to be a part of this. Like, some of the resources were sent to me by the community. So it was a document at first, right? And so people would say, hey, I know this, this therapist who's Black, or this counselor who's Indigenous, you know, and so on and so forth. So it was partly, receiving resources from the community or having experienced them or used them myself. And, there's actually two. So I worked with Learner in the Full Stack Developer Program that I worked on over the summer and the spring. And there is another iteration of this, but I won't share that because it's really literally just the resources plunked onto a website. And because I didn't create it, I'm not able to change anything or make it as responsive as I have it now. So it wasn't, I look at it as a directory and not say, needing to have that relationship with the organizations, because any resource listed refers you to the organization or the collective or the website, etc. itself. So everything, like every title on the website, you can go directly to the organization, and I have no stake or part in that. And one of the things I made sure to do in the about page is to let people know that I am not a mental health professional in any shape or form, because I anticipate, because there's an email address for the website and I needed that email to be able to create the website, I anticipate that I may receive emails that are specifically asking individual mental health questions, and I cannot answer those legally as I am not a mental health professional. So I have done as much as humanly possible to remove me from the equation, other than the image credits. If I took the picture, I credit myself. But other than that, this is not about me. And I want to make that clear, because I am not a mental health professional and I don't have the training of a mental health professional, and I don't want to be legally or ethically responsible for people seeking these resources. So the resources are put there as a living directory, and they are not put there as these persons' resources. They're not my resources. These are resources that I have curated over my own experiences. And every single title that you see that refers to a resource, it goes to that individual or that group's website.
Like, I was thinking about for the individual mental health counselors and therapists and psychologists, like, so was that more experiences you'd had with these individuals or people you knew, sort of?
That's a great question. So that part of the website, those were submitted to me from people in the community who said, oh, did you know, I'd like to submit so-and-so because they are a person of color. And so that the BIPOC mental health professionals, those were, aside from Calgary Counseling, which I directly had experience with and made use of their services, the rest were submitted to me by the community.
That makes sense.
There's no way I could afford all that.
Yeah. No, I was just thinking about, because you're saying it was like people in the community, recommending these individuals. Because I was just sort of thinking about how many more individual service providers, I think I'm bad at words, may be in Calgary, and how, like, maybe like that resource list may grow, but also like I was wondering how, without having like recommendations from the community, how you would even go about finding that, because I guess like you are making the resource. If you wanted to Google BIPOC mental health or BIPOC therapists in Calgary, I mean,
oh, you get nothing. I've done it. When I was at my low point, well, I've had, so the shitty thing about depression, if anyone listening has never suffered from it, is the more depressive episodes you have in your lifetime, the more susceptible you are to them in the future. And so the last couple of years, I've had 3 major depressive episodes, which is pretty harrowing. And so the first time I had a mental break and severe depressive, my first severe depressive episode since my teenage years, I specifically looked up Black mental health professionals. And what you get is Psychology Today. And there's 4 listed for Calgary, Alberta. 3 of the people on there are white. And I know that because I reached out to every single one of them, because I noticed that the white people listed there on the resource, like on the Psychology Today, they didn't have their pictures. And that was a red flag for me. And I asked them, and they are white. There was one woman. So another great question, Chloe. They told me that they had experience with Black people, or one of them said people of color. And I was like, okay, you're not Black. Even if you had experience with people of color, that does not make you a Black person. You should not be listed on this. But because I was not in a good place, I didn't blast them for even having the audacity to put themselves on listing themselves as a Black mental health professional. And so part of the impetus to curate the resource list in the first place was to address that serious gap, right? Because if you are a Black person in Calgary, Alberta, who is depressed and wants to speak to another Black person, I almost guarantee you will get that Psychology Today link. It is trash. There's only one Black person on there. And so that was like, and that was pretty, like, that makes it worse, right? That made it worse for me because I was like, I want to speak to somebody who has had similar experiences or potentially has had similar experiences to myself. And to go through that resource and have that happen, I was like, oh my God. And so, yeah, this resource that I've created is already 10 times better than what is available to people of color in terms of our mental health care in Calgary. Now I will put the caveat that, you know, I can only know so much. I'm one person, right? And so this is why there's a contact page and you can submit a form or an email to me if there are resources that other people feel need to be added, because I know that there are, there's quite a few Indigenous resources here in Calgary, but I'm not as aware of them because I'm not an Indigenous person, or not Indigenous to North America at the very least. And so I'm not as aware of those resources. And it's also important to note that particularly where racialized people are concerned, often the resources that get grouped are by cultural or ethnic origins. And so there is like an abundance of, you know, of Afro-Caribbean community associations here in Calgary that, you know, I wouldn't say are about mental health, but they might know, right, about, you know, other Black or Indigenous or POC mental health care professionals and practitioners. So I anticipate that this resource list will grow in time, that people will submit resources that they think are helpful. There may be resources that cease to exist, right? And so I call it a living directory specifically for that reason, and that having a website allows it to live and to grow and to change.
Yeah, it's just really great that now people, as of yesterday, our fingers on the pulse here on this podcast.
Nice.
We're up to date. They have something to Google.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, the tagline for the website is Black, Indigenous, and POC-centered resources in YYC and beyond. And particularly, I see the decolonial and anti-racist and the resources and the relevant articles and the self-care, those really can be global. And so I do anticipate that Black, Indigenous, and POC people, you know, across Canada and across the world will have benefit from these resources, because those specific categories, they already include or will more so the relevant articles and self-care for sure. And then as I'm aware of them, the, you know, and learn of them, the decolonial anti-racist resources, those don't have to be attached to Calgary. But now there is the community resources and the mental health professionals that are that specifically is resources in Calgary and one of them in Edmonton, Edmonton, Alberta.
So it's sort of the, can be like the Southern Alberta.
Absolutely, yeah.
Region. You might have already answered this question, but is there anything around this topic of BIPOC mental health that has sort of in particular been on your mind lately that you've been thinking about or like would like to speak about?
I mean, yes, in the sense that the holidays are a pretty harrowing time for a lot of people. And so mental health resources are, simply put, they're more pressing this time of year, and probably, you know, unconsciously why I felt that it was now that this resource needed to go live. And it's not like I've been curating this, or sorry, not curating, not that I've been planning this website, you know, for years. Literally yesterday, I was like, oh, I should make this a website. So I made the email address on Sunday night. And then yesterday, I started putting the resources in the background as I was doing different things. And now it's live. And I think it is so relevant, right? Because it is the holiday season and a lot of people are going to need more mental health support now. And yeah, now people have it at their fingertips. And I do want to say that, you know, this resource, although it is BIPOC communities that are centered, there is still benefit for white people, you know, in the sense of mental health professionals knowing about this resource and passing it on to clients and patients if they need it. Particularly the decolonial and anti-racist resources will be relevant to white people because those are educational resources. The self-care, by all means, you know, if a white person benefits from it, I think that's great. And the relevant articles, again, those are articles that are written on the subject of BIPOC mental health. And I would argue that actually mental health professionals who are white should be looking at those articles and educating themselves, you know, as much as they can. So this is a resource really for everybody. And I'm so proud in the sense that now there is a place and in this resource that exists for the mental health of racialized people in YYC and beyond, that specifically is like naming and claiming it.
Yeah. You know what? I think I'm going to email my therapist with the link tonight and be like, hey, here's a great link.
And, you know, I'm definitely open to feedback and suggestions that people have, though I have, because I know from my work in the community and specifically any resources that center Black, Indigenous and people of color, there can be pushback and negative reactions. So I have made a note that I reserve the right to refuse to add any resources that are not relevant or inappropriate without providing that person an explanation, because that's emotional labor for me. And unless I'm being paid for that, I'm not going to engage in that kind of emotional labor. And I also explain in the about page why I have not included, say, the distress center or 211 or, you know, whatever. It's not because those are not relevant resources. They absolutely can be. But that's not the intention of the website. And so what I've done instead is on the about page, there is a link to a resource called Help Seeker, which includes a wide variety of resources. It's like a basically a resource directory for all of Canada. And so it has housing, addictions counseling, mental health, you know, like it is a fantastic resource. And so if people need those other mental health resources, those are available to them via Help Seeker. So it's not that I'm disparaging, you know, the other mental health resources that exist, but that those are well supported, they're well funded, they're well known about. And if people need those, they can access that through Help Seeker.
Yeah, sometimes you need something more specific.
Absolutely. Like, I look at it this way. We often don't bat an eyelash when they're LGBTQ specific resources, right? And that's another one of my intersections. I'm queer as well. And to me, my mental health is most impacted by racism. And so one of the dynamics that I've encountered is when I specify that I want a counselor who is POC, and if it's possible that they're also queer as well, when the intake person was repeating that back to me, she's like, okay, you want a queer counselor, like an LGBTQ counselor? I said, no, I would like, my first criteria is a person of color. If they are also queer, and hello, we exist, that would be great. But
they just skipped over the first criteria.
Absolutely. The most important criteria. It's like, it's just, to me, it's a bonus to have the mental health practitioner who is of color be queer as well. But to me, it's, my requirement is a racialized person first. And I think it kind of speaks to the fact that you do have to advocate for yourself in the realm of mental health. And that can be incredibly difficult when you're going through a crisis. And also some people, I know for myself, I suffered with, I would say, some pretty severe social anxiety. Like, having to advocate for yourself is pretty friggin' daunting, but it is so necessary, particularly for folks who have, you know, multiple marginalized identities. We are forced to advocate for ourselves. And so this resource is really about giving people the tools and maybe to even give them some of the language that can be helpful in terms of advocating for themselves in their mental health journey. Because everyone's mental health journey is unique to them, right? There can be, and I thought of this, I was making the resource, there are obviously, you know, people of color out there who don't need to talk to another person of color about their mental health. And that's valid. However, I would say those of us who specifically want to speak to another racialized person about our mental health, we are at a disadvantage because that is not something that's really encouraged or thought about in the mainstream mental health offerings. And so it's already kind of like a thing that you can be a racialized person and get mental help from a white person. You know, that's not what's being discouraged. What is being discouraged, or that you sense there's active hostility, is when you specifically want another racialized person to address your mental health with you.
So one of the questions I sometimes ask on here is, I typically phrase, do you have any particular memories or anecdotes with this, or a fond memory of the topic? Now for this, I'm thinking, maybe, have you had any positive experiences with BIPOC mental health professionals?
Oh yeah. So when I was seeking a counselor last year, I specifically, that was from that encounter, actually, when I was asking for a POC counselor, it'd be great if they were queer too, but not required. And then the intake person didn't get it. I was persistent, and they did get me a POC counselor. And so her and I did some great work together. And she's going to be opening her own practice, actually. So I'm just waiting to hopefully hear from her. And I'll be adding that resource, obviously, to the resource list. And I actually had to take her name off of the directory because she's no longer practicing with Calgary Counseling, because she's creating her own her own practice with other POC mental health professionals. So they also recognize the need, right? Because obviously there are Black, Indigenous, and racialized people who are mental health practitioners, right? And so they see the need. One of the most exciting resources that was created in Calgary recently in the realm of mental health is the Color Factor. And the Color Factor is a mental health resource, and they primarily offer workshops that are very healing and very positive, just like so such joyous events. And the Color Factor was created by three women of color who are mental health professionals, and they saw the gap, they saw the need. And so, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that I get to be on their board or one of their committees, because I really am so invested in the work that they're doing and appreciative of the work that they are doing. And so that was so encouraging to me. The work that I did with my counselor was very encouraging. She gave me a couple of tools that I actively use, you know, to maintain my mental health. And she really showed me that it was possible to have a positive therapeutic relationship with a professional. And that was not an experience I had had in the realm of mental health until I encountered my counselor. And so she showed me that it's possible, because mental health is not something that is one and done for any of us, right? Even if, you know, you would consider yourself to not experience mental health issues, you don't know what can happen to you in your life where that may change. And so I think it's so important to get into the habit of, you know, having a positive relationship with our mental health while we're in a good place, so that we can build the resilience that we need to carry us through the difficult times.
Yeah, I'm really glad you were able to find somebody who could, yeah, give you a positive experience.
Yeah, God forbid, after 16 years, actually, it was more like, gosh, I remember my first kind of mental health crisis happening at around age 13. And so from the age of 13, I'm now 31 years old. My first positive mental health experience was at the grand old age of, I guess I would have been 30, like 29 going on 30. And it should not take a lifetime to have a positive mental health experience with a professional. So I'm grateful that it happened. I now know that therapy and counseling can make a huge difference, and they can make an impact, but it has to be within the context of trust and understanding, right? Because I didn't even have to flinch at talking about racism with my counselor. She's a woman of color as well, and she just got it, right? And I was just grateful for that. And I do want to say, it is important to note that not all Black, Indigenous, and POC mental health professionals actually have a lens of anti-racism or understanding of racism. I had the very opposite encounter over the summer, where I was in the process of being diagnosed for ADHD, and the first psychologist that I saw to determine if that was an appropriate assessment or diagnosis was a Black woman doctor, and she was fucking awful. She doesn't believe racism exists. She said that in her 6 years of being in Canada, she's never experienced racism. And so I think it's important for me to acknowledge that, not to simply disparage her as a person, though I would do that at length, but this is not the right format for that, or the appropriate, I should say, format for that. But I want to impress upon listeners that even with somebody who looks like you and who you might assume has similar experiences, you may still be in a position where you need to advocate for yourself. And so kind of the shift in my lens that happened after that encounter was, I need to look at the person's actions and how they actually treat me and other people, to know where they stand, right? And are there white mental health professionals out there who are anti-racist and, you know, have a lens and an understanding of how race can impact mental health, from not from a lived experience, obviously, but from, you know, from learning and listening from racialized people? Of course, they exist and they're out there. However, I think it is more important to acknowledge that gap in service, and that we need to start thinking about, as a society, how racism impacts mental health, and take that as seriously as we would, you know, mental health conditions themselves.
Yeah, it's really frustrating that people who provide mental health services are still people.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
I mean, I think about that a lot, because it's hard enough, even like as a non-racialized person sometimes, to find a good mental health practitioner. And like, it's just adding that extra huge layer on. And like, yeah, I mean, I've had lots of a variety of experiences with individuals in that profession who it is like, what
are you doing here? Go home.
Yeah, like, what's going on? And you know, you can access that training and you can get, you know, your certification, but that's ultimately not, I mean, obviously having that training is what's required, but you need to have like another level of like emotional awareness and openness.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I would argue, and that particular mental health quote unquote professional, I sensed that she may be a sadist and enjoys the suffering of others. And I would argue that, you know, it's important for anybody who's struggling with mental health issues to be aware of the reality that somebody can have the title of doctor, or they can be in a position of power and authority, and that does not mean they have your best interest in mind. Right. And so when you get a feeling that a therapeutic relationship is not working, go with your gut. There's a reason that your alarm bells are going off, and don't ignore that, because you have your lived experiences and you are picking up on something or sensing something that is harmful to you. And that's what matters. That person may have an excellent therapeutic relationship with somebody else, but that's not your dynamic with them. And that is valid.
So we're coming up on an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you a question that our previous guest provided, and it's very appropriate to this topic and conversation, and that is, given the state of things, what forms of self-care do you do, or like, what do you do to calm yourself down?
Yoga. I have a couple of apps that I really, really like. One, it's 5 Minute Yoga by Olson, by the Olson app company, excuse me. And I bought a lifetime subscription, which is like $35 Canadian. And this, like, and you get access to their other products too. So they have 5 Minute workouts, they have a meditation app, and like a bunch of others. There's a pelvic floor workout if you want that in your life.
Nice.
And so $35 for a lifetime subscription was to me like, hell yeah, I'll do that. And so, you know, if I need to move around, or I'm just feeling kind of like riled up about something, I'll try to take, you know, a few minutes out to do some yoga. And I really kind of emphasize that, you know, my practice is for myself, and I practice in the way that makes sense to me. And so there's people who think you have to spend an hour a day on yoga, and that works for them, cool. But sometimes all I can manage is 5 minutes, and 5 minutes of stretching a day beats the crap out of 0 minutes of stretching a day. And there's another app that I found recently, another yoga app that I really, really like. It's from HomeFit. And that one is free. You only see ads at the end of the workout or an ad at the end of the workout. And they have, you know, from beginner to advanced workouts. They have a pose dictionary and a sauna dictionary. They have a sun salutation, and they have like a stress buster, about 6 minute workout. So I'm a firm believer in fitting in whatever physical activity I can for my mental well-being. I did get the ADHD diagnosis, not from that person, but from another mental health professional. And sitting down for long periods of time is not my jam inherently. So getting up and doing some yoga helps to kind of, you know, recenter and refocus myself. I find that yoga in some ways is more accessible to me because as much as I do have a meditation practice, and I've been a Zen practitioner for, I think, almost 8 years now, with undiagnosed ADHD, which I see more and more as a fucking feat. But sometimes meditation, because it's part of my spiritual practice, and sometimes I get in my head about how much I need to sit and what have you, I don't necessarily find it as relaxing or as self-care as say yoga. And you know, my meditation practice, I try to practice with what we call a sangha or a community. And so that, you know, you have to be practicing at a certain time, you know, now that we're doing things virtually. So I find that yoga just breaks me free of that and gets me out of my head for a few minutes. And then I'm more prepared for the task. And I guess lastly, my self-care really just involves honoring who I am as a person and speaking my truth and saying what I need to say and doing what I need to do and not feeling bad about it.
Yeah, self-care can sometimes just be a way of moving through the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely don't believe in this concept of self-care as you need to do X, Y, and Z. If it's helpful to you and you're not hurting other people, then go for it. I mean, unless you work that out, you know, consensually, as long as it doesn't hurt people, go for it.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me, Chloe.
You're welcome. I just really value your time and your words. And also, I, as someone also with ADHD, I especially really related to you saying sometimes 5 minutes is all I can manage, because that's something I'm always dealing with, particularly for things like yoga and stuff like that. Yeah, just feeling like, oh, this is the right way to do things. This is the wrong way to do things. Yeah, and like I find it really helpful just to like dance like a maniac.
Yes. Oh, I love dancing. I didn't mention it, but I love dancing as well.
Yeah, I don't drink and I don't go to parties a lot, but I really miss going to a queer club night and like putting on it weird things and just going for it, just hoofing it.
Absolutely. And doing it for yourself. I kind of, that's how I see self-care now, is something that you do for yourself, and that can look so many different ways. And you know, I don't care if other people do 2 hours of yoga a day in a row. Like, great, cool. I'm gonna do my 5 minutes, and that's time for me that I'm present in my body and out of my head, and that's what makes me happy.
Well, I hope that you have a wonderful week, and I guess a wonderful day, because where you are, it's like mid-afternoon.
Yeah, I have a bunch of chores to do. So, I mean, not that they're inherently fun, but, you know, I find a way to make them tolerable.
Yeah, I mean, you can always dance while doing chores.
I do.
Depending on the chore, I guess.
Sometimes maybe cutting food, that's not so great, but everything else, pretty fair game.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, and thank you to everybody listening. Amazing. I'll see you.
Thank you, everyone. Happy holidays too.
Yes, happy holidays, everybody. Hey guys, in this episode, Melvi mentions the podcast they co-host, but not the name. It's called The Unlearning Channel, and you can find it on Spotify or pretty much anywhere you get podcasts. Thank you, as always, to Sappho for providing the absolutely scintillating theme music you're hearing right now. You can listen to her album Time Machine on Spotify by searching Sappho Time Machine or clicking the link in the episode description.